Till recently, medical science has involved moving parts of the body around and fixing physical things and working with action and reaction and chemicals in the body. And we have Andrew Phillips from Microsoft Research who's working to change all that. And so your hope is to one day be able to program for biological organisms, correct?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it's not just me. I think it's a growing field where people are looking increasingly at treating cells as complex machines that you can actually reprogram with the DNA of life, well, with the programming language of life, which is DNA. So you can think of that as your starting point for doing more intelligent manipulation.
So tell me about your path. What brought you to Microsoft?
Well, my background is in theoretical computer science, so sort of programming language theory, and I was looking at programming languages for mobile systems, systems that move around the internet. You've got mobile devices, you've got servers, and then it turns out that this sort of thing is sort of reminiscent of biological systems, where there's a lot of things happening in parallel, lots of things moving around, things can fail. So I came on board Microsoft Research Cambridge to try and see how techniques from programming languages for mobile systems can be applied to biological systems, and that's how I got started.
And as a scientist for Microsoft Research, how do you spend your day? What's most of your week like as an MSR scientist?
Yeah, it's an interesting title. I mean, really, I'm doing what I was trained to do, which is programming languages.
Yeah.
But we're looking at the application to biological computation. So I spend my days either reading scientific literature, looking at the latest in synthetic biology or in DNA computing. We also have a community of users who are interested in our software, in the academic community. So we're trying to see whether we can develop new algorithms, make our software more effective, more efficient. And just keeping an eye on what's going on.
Yeah, so tell me about SPIM.
Yeah, so SPIM is our programming language for biology. And basically the idea was to take a language that was developed for concurrent computer systems and apply it to biological systems, which are also concurrent.
So when you say apply it to biological systems, are you talking about specifically DNA?
So in this case, I think SPIM was developed as a reverse engineering language.
Yeah.
So you take an existing system like the immune system, and you want to be able to model the immune system in the way in which it's constructed. So it's constructed in individual components. You've got cells that have different functions. You've got pathways that have different functions that are modules. So we wanted a way to take these existing systems and write a program that describes how they would behave or how they would behave under certain perturbations. So we have like a computational model that describes an existing system in a modular way. And that's the programming language aspect. And now more recently, we've been looking at using similar techniques to SPIM, actually, sort of based on the process calculi approach, but then trying to forward engineer systems.
Yeah.
So we're looking at both sides of the coin, I think. Yeah.
So is the hope to be able to take a strand of DNA and to figure out what exactly it does or how it will act in a living organism?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you can start by taking existing DNA and say, well, how will it act?
So it probably helps at this point to take DNA and you know what it is. Or
yeah, and that's sort of like the design, the simulation aspect.
Yeah.
So you could say, right, I'm going to take this DNA sequence, I'm going to put it in. I mean, if you take a virus, like say you take, hepatitis B or something, and you put it in a cell, in the human body, you kind of know what's going to happen. The virus is a little program that's going to tell the cell, make more copies of the virus, and it's going to hijack, and you're going to get sick, and so you kind of know what's going to happen. Well, engineering with DNA is a bit like that, but you want to be able to, rather than take a virus, you want to take something that's not as harmful and actually then, predict what it's going to do in the cell, hopefully something beneficial. Right?
So in the future, at some point, you might be able to take DNA that's dormant or not used in your body and figure out what it was for at some point in the past?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's this notion of junk DNA, right?
Yeah.
Like people say, oh, the DNA is not used. But
yeah.
I'm not sure we understand. I mean, if you think about a piece of software, I don't know, like, you know, Windows operating system, you've got a lot of code in there.
Yeah.
Not all of it is used. So you could say, hang on a minute, it's not being used. Let me just take it out.
Yeah.
And then you get, I don't know, some special network request, or you want to reinstall something. And then it just
Everything just starts falling apart.
There are certain things that are there so that when your body gets stressed, certain things kick in. Or, I don't know, you know, when you're doing something specific that you don't normally do. So I'm not sure we fully understand what bits we can remove.
Yeah. So the body, though, is very redundant. It's very robust.
Yeah.
There's a lot of concurrent systems that can make up for failures in other parts.
That's right, yeah.
So what can we learn from that as a software company, as a technology company? I mean, are there things that the body does that we are like, oh, that'd be a good idea for computing?
Yeah, I mean, people have been looking to nature for inspiration for a long time. You know, you've got like cameras and the lens and you know, you've sort of got flight, people sort of trying to understand how nature does it, and then, you know, doing your own version of things.
So yeah.
That's always been the case, and I think that always will be the case. And I mean, some people are looking at the immune system. For example, you've got artificial immune systems, which sort of, if you think about the immune system, it's really like sort of a computer virus scanner, or you can, which came first. But the idea, you know, you can sort of learn from how the body sort of recognizes a disease and then builds up a sort of a resistance to it, so that when it gets infected again, it can deal with it better the next time. So there's certainly ways that we can learn from nature, but at the moment, it's difficult to tell what those things are going to be in the future.
So I was watching a video of a speech that you gave recently, the Tech Fest.
Okay,
And you mentioned there that some of these things are already being done today. What types of things in this this space are being done today?
Right, so you've got, and so in that lecture I was talking about two aspects of DNA, right? One aspect is DNA as hardware. So you think of a pacemaker, right?
Yeah.
You've got a pacemaker. It's a piece of hardware and it's helping your heart to beat. You can think of a little DNA circuit, like a miniature computer inside cells that will be like a pacemaker in the cell, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or it can be doing something for the cell. And then you've got DNA as software, which is looking at, you know, the things I described, like viruses are sort of computer programs, reprogramming the cell, and we can do our own programs. So the kind of things that are being done on the hardware side, people have been looking at having small computers as smart drugs. That's a technique sort of pioneered by Uri Shapiro a while ago, and he was looking at having drugs where, you know, say your cell has cancer, there's a little molecule that can cause your cell to commit suicide. You don't want that molecule to be released, you know, at the wrong time.
No.
So you have computation in there that says, is this cancer marker present? Is that cancer marker present? Am I sure? And then you have some logic there, and then you release a drug. So a smart drug, a DNA circuit in a cell, acting as a little monitor and releasing drugs as needed. And that's sort of, there was actual research done on that, and they actually had a prototype, a smart drug molecular computer. On the software side, sort of a field that's really sort of taking off for the more general academic community, you've got students now that have these competitions, iGEM competition, International Genetically Engineered Machines, and they basically just sort of taking a repository of parts, so existing bits, sort of DNA bits that you can put together into cells, and engineering what they like. I mean, they're engineering sort of cells that glow on and off, you know, like oscillators.
Mm-hmm.
They've engineered cells like bacteria to detect arsenic in drinking water. That's kind of a difficult problem. It's very expensive to detect.
Yeah.
They've engineered an arsenic detector in bacteria, and then the bacteria change color. If you put them into the water, they change color and say, it's got arsenic. Sort of very cheap, sustainable, because the bacteria sort of sustain themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And so those things that even students are doing. But, you know, there are more ambitious projects which people are actually working on. Like, you know, there's one project to engineer bacteria to fix nitrogen for plants and set a symbiotic relationship with plants. And then the plants no longer need fertilizer to fix bacteria. So you get a much more sustainable crop. There's been research engineering bacteria to stop the spread of cancer. So the bacterial colonies just sort of stop cancer from spreading.
Yeah.
And there's sort of a more ambitious project now, which is sort of being done by Craig Venter Institute and other places. Lots of money invested where people are trying to engineer bacteria to take carbon dioxide from the atmosphere and convert it into biofuel. So you remove CO2 and you create fuel.
So you don't tell the bacteria to turn off. So how do you stop the bacteria from taking all the CO2 out of the atmosphere and then all the plants?
Yeah, I don't think that's going to be a problem. I mean, the idea would be you control that. You keep the bacteria in some. You won't just release them into the environment.
Yeah.
You keep them in some controlled space.
Yeah.
And have them sort of active.
Because nothing ever gets out. So.
Well, I mean, there's already this sort of people have engineered yeast to produce sort of anti-malarial drugs.
There's
been this really nice, great project. It's sort of, you know, a similar kind of idea of different techniques
where
you have bacteria as factories for producing, you know, chemicals or drugs that are very difficult to obtain from natural sources, and they could be much more cheaply produced. And, you know, in that case, you've got these the yeast being producing this drug, and, you know, it's contained. You've got to be careful, but it's no more dangerous than a nuclear power, for example.
Yeah, yeah. So what are the developments that are on the near-term horizon that could make big changes in this field?
Well, I think, I mean, we've heard it from our collaborators, so we're working closely with people in Cambridge University and elsewhere who are, have the wet lab expertise, with, you know, who are actually synthesizing these sort of synthetic organisms, putting back to you, putting DNA into these organisms. And I think one of the challenges that they face is designing these systems. So I think the software is actually coming to the fore right now. And there's software at different levels. Software, like what we're looking at, is how to write a piece of code that says what you want the cell to do, and then hit compile, and then that code gets transformed or generated into DNA.
So you compile from code into DNA.
Yeah,
that's pretty
right.
Cool.
So instead of to zeros and ones, you compile it to GATC. And this is work that was done actually by an intern who was in my group, Michael Peterson, and, you know, he really came up with the idea, and we worked together on the design of the system. So you now have a piece of software where you can just compile to DNA, and then you stick it in the cells. And the thing is, you want to simulate, you want to debug that design, rather than having to go in, tweak the cells. Sometimes it takes days. Then do the experiment. Doesn't work. You got to go back. So the software can really help speed up that cycle of development, so that you can actually have, you know, it's a bit like if you wanted to build a microchip, you know, and you sort of didn't have the computer software. You just had to put the transistors together and see what happened.
Yeah.
You really do need the software. That's going to be one of the major challenges, I think.
Yeah. So, at what point do scientists think about creating things that affect a population more broadly, as opposed to creating treatments for an individual person based on their specific DNA strand?
Yeah, I think all of that's gonna happen. I mean, it's gonna tend towards this personalized medicine, right? So as soon as you have cheap sequencing of the human genome, you'll be able to exploit that.
Mm-hmm.
At the moment, people are looking at more general treatments because those are the ones that are most, effective over larger populations, and it's difficult to get the cost of sequencing the genome. But I think as that cost goes down, then we'll have more personalized treatment. And I think that will be certainly possible, because it's just going to be a system, instead of a software system, it's going to be a biological system that you can study.
And does anyone sit around and think about the ethics about programming for biology?
Yeah, a lot of people do that. There's a lot of ethics committees. Some people are quite worried. I don't think there's anything to be worried about at the moment. The cells don't really survive outside the lab.
Yeah.
We've got plenty of dangerous microorganisms out there. You've got E. coli, you've got Ebola, you've got, you know, whatever smallpox virus that you can get your hands on. So I think there'd be the same concerns that exist already, and the same ways of containing. You'd have special laboratories where you contain. I mean, people are already doing experiments in HIV, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you can say, well, what if they create an even more deadly form of HIV?
Sure. Yeah.
So you need to have these things in place. And people are putting them in place so that when the technology is ready, I think, you know, we'll have these mechanisms to control it.
But we're not just rushing into the future without thinking about these things.
No, people are definitely thinking about these things, and I think that people are sort of putting measures in place, and I think that's on track.
So what excites you most about this field? What was your biggest hope for the future?
Well, I think the sky's the limit. I think that's pretty much, you know, the most exciting thing for me. I mean, the potential is really huge,
mm-hmm.
but also I think it's sort of scientifically, we don't really understand how living things work. And there's this nice quote by Richard Feynman, a sort of physicist and Nobel laureate. He says, "What I cannot create, I do not understand." So in building these things, we get to understand how life works, what's the software of life, And, you know, along the way, there's potential to sort of tackle some of the fundamental challenges in science, like, you know, disease and food, even climate, energy. So I think this potential in all those directions is tremendous. So.
Well, this is awesome. I can't wait to see what happens. And thanks for coming to talk to us about it.
Sure, my pleasure. Great.